Welcome to radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to firehouse.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to podcast number 3 of Near Miss Listen and Learn. Thanks to firehouse.com for making this podcast a possibility. We appreciate their support. My name is John Tippett. I'll be your moderator today. I work as a battalion chief in Montgomery County, Maryland. Joining us is Todd Clist. Todd and I both work at the IAFC, both as project managers. I work with the National Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System. Todd, who's a captain with the Sterling Volunteer Fire Company in Loudoun County, Virginia, is a program manager for the Fire Chief Association's Wildland Urban Interface and Intrastate Mutual Aid Programs. This edition of Near Miss Listen and Learn kicks off a five-part series that we're going to be doing, and we'll be focusing on a process called crew resource management and how those issues are identified in near-miss reports. We'll be taking a different principle from the five primary CRM components over the next five Listen and Learns and highlighting the reports that represent positive outcomes that result of the good use of CRM principles, and then also look at reports that could have benefited from a more effective use of the featured principle. Today's reports can be found by using a keyword search feature on the homepage and entering the keywords good communication and bad or poor communication, or you can just type in the report number with the search reports feature. Crew resource management was introduced into the commercial aviation community in the mid-1970s as a tool to combat the effects of error. A University of Texas psychologist, Dr. Robert Helmreich, is credited with developing the program. Dr. Helmreich and several colleagues had been called in to look at air disasters and study the cockpit voice recordings. They quickly determined that what was going on in the cockpit of the aircraft between the captain, the first officer, and in some cases the engineer and the rest of the crew were significant contributing factors. Up until the advent of the cockpit voice recording, most of the air carrier community had spent the majority of its energy working on new technologies to overcome the problems that resulted in disasters. But once the cockpit voice recorder came into vogue, the industry quickly recognized that about 80% of all the air disasters were the result of human error and contributing factors that led to those errors. Dr. Helmreich and his colleagues identified that the aspect for the air disasters usually resulted when the captain and crew were not communicating well. They made poor or erroneous decisions based on information or lack of information provided. They didn't work effectively as a team. They had the wrong people in positions of responsibility. And finally, there were issues with the 21st century word du jour, situational awareness. 30 years downstream now, the U.S. commercial airline industry is among the safest means of travel known to humanity. Dr. Helmreich's work and those of his colleagues is recognized worldwide as a groundbreaking approach to making improvements in safety. So the U.S. commercial airline industry is currently in its sixth generation of crew resource management. It's under a new title called Threat and Error Management. And it connotes that there is more to staying out of harm's way than just managing error. Just getting into it in the fire service, we're taking those initial steps there. Basically, we have to recognize that threats as well as mistakes contribute to getting in the way of our safety. In 1999, CRM was brought to the fire service by a wildland component. In 2000, Gary Breeze, then the executive director of the IAFC, convened a meeting of leading fire service leaders and CRM users. The result of that meeting was the introduction of CRM to the fire service at large. Actually, there are five elements that we're going to be talking about over the course of the next couple of months. We're going to be focusing on communication, decision-making, task allocation, teamwork, and situational awareness. We're going to be dealing with communication, or for this podcast. The case for good communication can't be overstated, obviously. Communication and its sister, miscommunication, is often cited as a leading contributing factor in line-of-duty deaths, injuries, accidents, and near misses. So good communication is often cited in cases where there are favorable outcomes, and I think we all know from doing our after-action reports and also sitting down and doing our briefing, post-incident briefings, that we do mention that there was good communication between all the parties involved. The narrator for the reports that we'll be reviewing is not the report submitter. In some cases, a lot of times, we've had to condense the reports down, and in particular, for this next series of podcasts, we're going to be focusing and editing the reports so that they focus just on the principles that we're going to be talking about. So our first report details an event that takes place between a driver and an officer. It's report number 08-095. And you can find it by going to www.firefighternearmiss.com. It was submitted by a driver, engineer, and a volunteer department from FEMA Region 3, and the reporter was involved in the event. Todd?
While driving a ladder truck to a vehicle fire that had extended into a building, I collided with a telephone pole. The collision happened at a very low speed and resulted in minor damage to the ladder truck and the pole. Upon approach to the scene, we encountered a very difficult turn into an alley with a telephone pole on the inside radius of the turn. It was dark at the time, and visibility was minimal. As I entered the alley, I could not see my right mirror. I stopped and asked the officer how I was on the pole. I thought I heard him say, "You're okay on the pole." Hearing this, I moved forward again, and this time the officer said nothing at first and then said that I was on the pole. At the same time, I was consulting with the officer. He was on the radio getting an assignment. Being on the radio caused him to block my right mirror, but this was of minimal consequence because I had very limited visibility of the mirror due to the darkness. Also because of the communication with the incident commander, as well as other radio traffic, I believe I misunderstood his message to be when I asked about my position relative to the pole. My lessons learned. Communication between the driver and the officer need to be much better. The communication model was not followed because of many things happening at once. Had I confirmed with the officer this answer to my question, this would not have happened. It might also be a good idea to have a policy of the officer getting out and assisting with movement of the vehicle in tight quarters or areas of limited visibility, just like when backing.
Thanks, Todd. As we break down this incident, the reporter does a great job of focusing on the communication or lack of communication that occurs and some of the things that happen. Obviously, when we want to relay messages back and forth, we have to make sure that the sender and the receiver are on the same page. We have to be aware of things like barriers that get in the way of effective communication, like the distraction of the other radio traffic, the officer's attention being drawn away to get an assignment. And then also think about things like the common language that occurred. Most of what we do becomes a misunderstanding of the most commonly used words because they have a variety of different meanings. So in this particular case, when the driver asked for how he was doing on the pole and he thought he heard the officer say, "You're okay on the pole," in essence, the officer was saying that he was actually on the pole or actually striking the pole. But what we tend to do in our language patterns, especially in the fire service, is because we work in time-compressed atmospheres, we try to shorten our language, and we believe we understand what people are saying, but we tend to misunderstand that. So among the lessons that we can also carry forward are to make sure we ask for clarification, use a more assertive approach when we are communicating, make sure that we clearly understand what people are saying when they're communicating back and forth to us. Our next report is report number 07-713. It was submitted by a battalion chief in a mostly paid combination department from FEMA Region 3, and the reporter in this case was also involved in the event. Here's Todd.
Units responded for the report of a structure fire, a fire reported in an attached garage under renovation. Upon arrival of the first unit, there was heavy fire in the garage with extension to the home. The first arriving unit reported propane tanks involved and on fire. Within the first 5 minutes of units arriving and operating on the scene, there were three large explosions, each involving a 100-pound propane cylinder. In addition, There was a face-to-face miscommunication between the driver of the 4th Thew engine and the officer, who was detailed in from another station. This resulted in several-minute delay and establishment of a sustained water supply for the 1st Thew engine. The three explosions occurred while personnel were engaged in evacuation of civilians in exposure structures. The explosions were powerful enough to knock several firefighters down, but due to their wearing PPE and not being in the immediate proximity of the explosions, there were no injuries. My lessons learned. The calling party reported to the 911 operator that there were propane tanks involved in the area of the fire. This information was never relayed to the responding units. Dispatchers must be trained to relay pertinent information like this to responding companies. The driver and officer on the 4th Thew engine did not communicate effectively. In this case, the officer gave instructions which were either not heard correctly or were misinterpreted by the driver operator. The officer and the firefighter abandoned the apparatus, the driver operator, and went to the fire, leaving the driver operator to complete a labor-intensive water supply operation by himself. It is imperative that two-way communication techniques be used to ensure that messages are understood and followed correctly, especially when pairing personnel who are not used to working with each other. When units will be delayed, they must notify the incident commander so that considerations of the delay can be made and adjustments made as necessary.
Thanks, Todd. As we go back through this report and we break down the issues that occurred communication-wise, we notice a similarity that transcends the other report as well. We talk about face-to-face miscommunications, misunderstanding of roles and responsibilities, and we also see that even though two people are sitting in very close proximity to each other, they can have a misunderstanding. The barriers that come into play here are the unfamiliarity between the officer and the driver, the 911 the information that was not relayed from the 911 operator, and for anyone that's operated a 911 center, you know that it's a pretty pretty intense place a lot of times, particularly when a working incident comes into play. So personnel in the field should be cognizant of the fact that the people that are taking the calls are put under a lot of pressure as well. It's important that all of us work towards the common goal of making sure we resolve the incident, and the best way we do that is stay on top of the fact that people will make mistakes, that there can be misunderstandings and miscommunication, and we have to be on guard for those things that we don't understand. If we go specifically to the actions of the 4th Thew Engine Company in this particular case, one of the ways we overcome these miscommunications and problems is to make sure that when everybody arrives at the station, whether it be for the beginning of the shift or assembly on a page or whatever the case may be, there is some sort of small or short briefing that takes place for people to get on, make sure they're all on the same page about who's going to do what the expectations are, and how they're going to communicate actions and activities. So, again, you see that there's a commonality here between the barriers that take place when we can't do face-to-face communication, the barriers that take place when we are face-to-face but trying to get actions and activities underway, and the barriers that occur when people are not familiar with each other. So we're going to take a break right now and talk about a few things that are going on in the near-miss world, and then we'll be back with two representations of good communication where CRM was applied effectively.
Congratulations to Chief Ron Mastin and the members of the Fairfax County Fire and Rescue Department on being the 2008 winners of the Near Miss Safety Leadership Award. Battalion Chief Danny Gray from the Department Safety Division penned the winning award essay. According to Battalion Chief Gray's essay, the Near Miss reporting system has played a vital role in advancing the level of recognition and the inherent risks of a firefighter's vocation and safety awareness and perfecting our safety policies. Our members habitually looked in within Fairfax County for procedural references, safety lessons, and information for training purposes. Our current system overcame this by reinforcing the importance of safety through active participation with the Near Miss website. In other news, the National Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System celebrated the third anniversary of the system's launch in Denver at the IAFC's annual conference, Fire Rescue International. August also saw the system post its 1,900th report, receive its fifth-year funding from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Assistance to Firefighters Grant Program, and embark on the first round of free training programs offered to fire departments. For more information, visit the resources page of www.firefighternearmiss.com.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Great. We're back now for the second half of this presentation, this podcast. We're going to look at report number 06438, and we're going to be focusing on some good communication that takes place between firefighters and crews in a variety of different settings. Our first report comes to us from a captain in a combination department in FEMA Region 2. The reporter was involved in the event, and we will be in the engine room of a fire station. Todd?
While demonstrating a newly installed vehicle exhaust removal system, an overhead door in the up position was activated and came down on the moving apparatus. When the driver entered the cab, the sun visor was in the down position. The driver repositioned the visor and began to pull the apparatus out of the bay. The overhead door was activated and began to close. Members outside the rig made verbal notification to the operator, who stopped the rig, and the door came to rest just in front of the raised roof section of the cab and immediately stopped and shut down. The rig remained parked until the overhead door was re-energized and moved up and off the cab roof. The door seemed to have been inadvertently activated from the remote opener located on the visor of the rig. Good communications between the operator and the members watching the evolution proved timely. The operator had good situational awareness and not moving further forward or back, and prevented damage to the door and the rig. My lessons learned. Maintain overhead door safety systems. Minimize speed when exiting the apparatus bays with the rigs. Communication is always important. Relocate door openers to areas where inadvertent contact will not cause them to activate.
Thanks, Todd. In this particular report, we note that several of the things that had occurred in the previous reports were able to be overcome either through good training or people recognizing the ability to speak up or recognizing their responsibility. So as the driver, as the reporter emphasizes here, the crew observed an action taking place that was going to result in damage. They felt that they could speak up or believe they could speak up. The reaction time that they used brought things back into focus and prevented damage from occurring. And the fact that they were using some situational awareness is indicative that as you go through the rest of the podcasts, you'll note that a lot of these principles are intertwined with each other for overall improved effectiveness. It's pretty critical there that the driver obviously couldn't see the door was coming down, that the other firefighters did speak out and speak up loudly enough for him to see. We certainly had the opportunity and have probably all experienced through the course of our time in the fire service where things have happened. And at the end, when the parts are laying on the floor, everybody says, well, I saw it coming, but nobody spoke up. So in this particular environment or in this particular setting, folks did feel comfortable speaking up. There were obviously no barriers to the communication because they got the attention of the driver. When you add in the factor of situational awareness where everyone was paying attention to what was going on and reacting to what was happening, the resolution was a pretty good outcome. One thing to note there, of course, in most of the overhead doors that we're operating in or should be operating with today, the door probably should have struck the pumper or struck the cab roof of the vehicle and then gone back up. So, again, there's something else that took place here that may have had something to do with the technology involved. However, some significant damage was averted because of good communication, people paying attention, and feeling free that their voice would have counted. So let's move on to our final report for this edition. It's report number 08169. It's submitted by a fire marshal from a volunteer department in FEMA Region 2. In this particular instance, this incident was reported to and submitted by a department safety officer, which is one of the additional places where particular firefighter ranks can submit reports. And this report is going to be presented in a bit of an abbreviated format because it's quite lengthy. So we're focusing just on the communication components, but I would recommend that once you look at the entire account of this report, you'll find that it'll be a pretty good drill topic in a variety of different venues. So you can go under the option 2 on search reports, report the search number. It'll be a blue text. Enter 08169 in the text box, and you'll get to see the complete report. So I'm going to turn it back over to Todd to give us the account.
Approaching the scene, I noticed heavy smoke pushing from the rear of the townhouse. I noticed the second floor windows with heavy blistering on them. The front door was forced open to find the first floor filled with smoke. I entered the townhouse about 10 feet into the hallway and was met with a heavy smoke and heat condition. I radioed the incident commander that was had a confirmed working fire. I exited the townhome to inform the first engine crew that we had heavy smoke and heat conditions on the first floor. Again, I entered with the hose team and search team. We were advised by command via fireground radio that the townhouse was constructed with truss-type roofs and floors. Armed with this information, we proceeded with an aggressive offensive attack, as is common practice. I discovered heavy fire on the first floor bathroom, which it appeared to be coming from the basement with extension to the second floor. I reported the conditions to command. The third assistant chief had made his way to the second floor stairwell and reported heavy smoke and heat on the second floor. The line that entered with me went to the basement stairwell to protect the interior stairs. The second, or backup line, was ordered to the second floor via the interior stairs to the second floor. We have one line pushing into the seat of the fire in the basement and one line operating on the second floor. The captain with the line reported to command that fire appeared to be burning in the ceiling or first floor truss system. I noticed a hole in the first floor living room area along the back wall of the bathroom. The floor felt spongy and significantly sagged down towards the basement. Once again, I gave this report to the hose line and operation and command. The hose team on the second floor advised of similar conditions existing on the second floor. I radioed command of the intimate collapse situation that we had on both floors and requested that we evacuate the building and reevaluate our options. My lessons learned. Unprotected open web floor trusses can fail rapidly without warning. Pre-fire planning is imperative with truss construction. Good fire ground communications and command and control can actually save firefighters' lives. Accountability is a must. SOPs and SOGs must be in place for response to no truss-type construction buildings.
Thanks, Todd. Well, that's just about going to wrap up our first edition of the podcast that deals with the CRM principle of communication. In our final report here, you can take very quickly away from this that there was a lot of talk going back and forth about not only the construction of the building, but the building conditions as it's under the demolition and the attack from the fire, and the fact that there's that the reporter in particular is calling out to command and talking about interior conditions. As we go into these situations, especially with lightweight construction, we'll note that it's probably going to be important for us to have, as the report says, an SOP or SOG in place that talks about whether or not we're going to use our current practice to fight these particular fires when they're well advanced in the structure. The key here, from at least this edition of Near Miss Listen and Learn, is that it's important for communication on the fire ground to take place between command, crews operating inside, personnel on various floors, and anyone else that has important information to feed to the command structure. One of the basic tenets of crew resource management is that information flow to the leader is critical so that the leader can make good decisions and keep people out of harm's way. So we spend a lot of time communicating. In fact, it's something that we do from what you're listening to now all the way up to when you're sitting across the table from someone or in the cab of a rig. But often we end up frequently having episodes of miscommunication. And there are several ways that this miscommunication occurs. We have errors from the sender, and errors on the part of the receiver. The sender believes they're saying something. They have that thought formulated in their mind, but it doesn't transfer over to the receiver very well because the receiver is not properly prepared to accept the message. Or there may be a medium issue. In the case of the 911 operator, we have a huge barrier, not being able to see what that individual can see. They also have a challenge when they're talking to people on the phone. They can't see what that caller is putting into place. On the fire ground, of course, the interior crews have a visibility issue, and the incident commander can rely only on his own her own set of eyes as they're watching the fire progress, and they're hearing the attack crews saying they're making headway, yet on the outside the building looks like it's in terrible shape. The errors that occur with miscommunication are really directly related to the barriers that we've focused on here, the attitudes of people. And when we talk about attitudes, we talk about your background, where you came from, how you were raised, speech patterns that developed through school and work, and also things like situational awareness and decision-making. What we decide to say or not say, and what we decide to listen to or not, or to ignore, are some of the things that get in the way of good communication. If we want to communicate important information, then that information is not used to its fullest potential. The failures that can occur are devastating, and just as devastating as withholding information. The bottom line here, speak in plain English, especially if you're under an emergency situation. Don't try to shortchange things. The most common radio traffic you hear is somebody gives a lengthy report and the reply back is okay. And that's really the beginning of the setup of the dominoes that cause problems. If you're the sender, make sure you're in plain English. And if you're a receiver, make sure you're an active listener. And, of course, in the world of communication, we're doing both all the time, so we always have to be alert for messages coming our way. Wherever you're in a face-to-face situation, watch the sender's face. See if you can read the lips so you can ensure their understanding. Look at their facial expressions, gestures, and all those types of things. Try not to get distracted by surroundings. Make sure you ask for clarification and repeat back orders to ensure understanding. Recognize that there are barriers that exist and that those barriers need to be addressed and overcome. You can also take a look at additional information on communication. There's a simple assertive communication model that's taught by a gentleman named Todd Bishop. If you Google him, you'll find a lot of information out there, but it's a very effective means for making sure as you're trying to get information flow into the incident commander, you make your voice heard. So that wraps up this edition of Near Miss Listen and Learn. Until next time, be vigilant, stay focused, and listen and learn. Thank you.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.